Hello and welcome to Canary Pod, a podcast from the team behind The Canary, Britain's leading independent news site. I'm Kerri-Anne Mendoza, The Canary's co-founder and editor-in-chief. Each week, we bring you a look behind the scenes at the biggest stories of the last 7 days. Today, it's the Battle of the Manifestos. So Theresa May was in Yorkshire this week to launch what has been termed the Misery Manifesto, because to be frank, it promises little else to anyone not yet rich enough to buy their own island. A tax bombshell for lower middle earners, an assault on social care and education, and a sting in the tail for elderly voters. At 88 pages, it might just be the longest suicide note in political history. It was high contrast indeed with the fully costed Labour manifesto, which puts a reverse gear on austerity, shifting the tax burden to those best able to pay and using that cash to regenerate public services and national infrastructure like roads, schools, hospitals, all the sorts of things which regular voters, young and old, rely upon. Discussing the manifestos in more detail with me this week, we have two of the editorial team from The Canary, UK editor Bec Sumner and global editor Ed Sykes. Hello, folks.
Hello.
Hello.
So, Bec, let's start with you. What's Theresa May promising to deliver if she's voted in on June the 8th?
Well, she's promising a government that's happy to attack pretty much everyone who isn't super rich. She's even attacking core Tory voters, pensioners and the middle classes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, really. If you're a pensioner, your winter fuel allowance is at risk. Your triple lock guarantee on the state pension is gone. If you get dementia and you own your own home, she's coming after you too. It's absolutely vicious stuff.
Sheesh.
Yeah, and then for everyone else, for the middle classes, well, for everyone else, really, she's coming after not only your old age care, but also your NHS, your children's schools, your libraries, your GP practices, your A&E departments. There's going to be ongoing austerity, absolute assault on education, open door for rising taxes, especially, you know, she dropped the pledge not to increase national insurance, which would affect millions if she brings in a tax rise on that.
Wow.
And it goes without saying, obviously, that the poorest and the vulnerable will keep being absolutely hammered by cuts.
That's insane. I mean, obviously, you know, prior to, you know, recording, I was just having a look through the key points and it just reads like madness. I mean, you've got pro-fracking, so you've got an environmentally unsustainable energy process, which is as unpopular with Conservative voters as it is anybody else. She's on board with fracking. She's scrapping the rail fare price freeze, scrapping the £9 hour minimum wage promise, axing the Leveson 2 proposals, which was this, you know, long-awaited second part of the Leveson inquiry, which is absolutely critical if we're going to have anything like a fair press with any integrity in this country. This dementia tax for the elderly, which we'll talk about more in a minute, is just one of the most insidious policies I've ever heard. Axing free school meals for infants, ending the triple lock for pensioners, scrapping the tax freeze promise on wages, ending the universal winter fuel payments, pro fox hunting, pro grammar schools, and a cut to corporation tax, bringing it down to 17%. What?
It's extraordinary, isn't it? It's unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, she's jettisoning any pretense at an economy that works for everyone, which, you know, is what she promised when she got into the leadership, when she was standing for leadership. Yeah, the winners are people who like hunting foxes, corporations who are going to get a nice juicy windfall with the reduction in corporation tax. And, you know, a few of the better off earners, those earning £45,000 to £50,000 who are getting an income tax cut at everyone else's expense.
So it kind of, I mean, it just must put pay to every hope of any traditional Conservative voter who's kind of pro-meritocracy, you know, entrepreneurial, the sort of old-fashioned Conservative who maybe hoped that with the arrival of Theresa May, we would see, you know, some more long-term policies coming from the Conservatives, you know, a break with the sort of short-termist austerity ideology of David Cameron and George Osborne. Well, she's put rocket boosters on it.
Exactly. Exactly. I think there's going to be a lot of very disappointed people reading this manifesto. But what's also revealing, in fact, it's probably more revealing about the manifesto, is what she doesn't promise. You know, the Tory manifesto doesn't mention national insurance, so opening the door for national insurance rises. It doesn't mention the word grammar schools once, not once. Grammar isn't in there, because she knows they're toxic. She knows they're toxic to the electorate. But she's effectively ending the ban on selective education. She doesn't mention the criticisms the UN have made of her treatment, you know, her government's treatment of sick and disabled people. She doesn't mention anything meaningful at all about Brexit. She's just worded it to basically give herself a mandate for a dangerous, hard Tory Brexit. She doesn't mention much about equality. So, you know, Labour's got a big section on equality, but the Tory manifesto doesn't mention lesbian and gay, bisexual, trans rights at all, which might not be surprising because she voted against the equal age of consent and same-sex adoption. But yeah, the absences in the manifesto speak volumes. She knows her policies aren't popular, and so she's hiding a lot of them.
Oh, thanks, Teresa. So can we talk just for a moment about this dementia tax? Because I honestly reread this several times to make sure that I wasn't having some sort of a nightmare episode, because it just beggars belief. So Bex, can we just take a closer look at this dementia tax plan? What is the actual policy?
Well, the policy is that anyone who needs care in their old age, who owns their own home, is going to have to pay. So anyone whose assets add up, including their house, add up to £100,000 or more, which is basically pretty much everyone who owns their own home in the cities in Britain, at least, is going to have to pay for their own care. So their loved ones won't get any inheritance, and it gets handed over to the Treasury. So it's going to hammer vast swathes of the population.
It's staggering, isn't it? I mean, I was looking through the numbers, because I think, you know, for many people, if you've never needed it, you might not know what the cost of social care is. You know, if you need a nursing home, you know, for the last couple of years of your life, which frankly most people do these days, because, you know, people are living longer, so they tend to end up suffering dementia and needing nursing home care for their kind of twilight years. And the average annual cost of nursing home care in the UK today is over £39,000 a year. £39,000. You compare that to the average wage, the average annual wage is only just over £26,000.
Yeah.
So you've got no way in hell of paying for this. You know, most people, you know, you're talking, and the limit is what? The whole assets are £100,000? I mean, if you literally just own like a one-bedroom flat in most British towns and cities, this is you.
Yeah.
You know, you have lost state support for elderly care. It's over if Theresa May wins on the 8th of June.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it? And there's going to be a lot of, you know, really heartbroken and worried people at the moment. You know, carers are already in a hugely, you know, people with family members that need care are already in a hugely stressful situation as it is. And it's just heartbreaking.
It really is. I mean, I wrote a story today about a woman called Anna from Putney who'd called into LBC radio because she, it sounded like she was a Tory voter originally. She sort of alludes to it as part of what she's saying. This woman rings up literally in tears, because she's just found out that, you know, this is a woman, this Anna from Putney is a disabled woman who's a full-time carer for her elderly mother who's living with dementia. And she's just found out after reading the Conservative manifesto, if Theresa May is elected, she's basically homeless when her mum dies.
I've got nowhere else to live, so what's going to happen to me?
And you're caring for your mother or father at the moment, are you?
Yes. Yeah.
I see. And are you...
What's going to happen to me, Mrs. May? Where are you, Theresa May? What's going to happen to me and the rest of your party?
And if you don't mind my asking, but what are the circumstances then? You're not able to do any other work, or you're the full-time carer? How does it work, Anna?
I'm a full-time carer with my mother.
Yes. And presumably there are expenses that you're racking up then, are there, for private nursing? How does it work? Do you get a community nurse, Anna?
No, I'm doing the care.
No, but what NHS, what provision of NHS? Does a community nurse not come and see your mum at all?
She does come and see her, yes.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I do care. But the point is, if at some point I'm not able to because I'm disabled myself, then she would need to have some care, like somebody come in and do the care for her. But that means then, what, at the end of it, I'll be made homeless.
Because her mother owns her own home, the moment that Anna is no longer able to take care of her mother full-time and she needs to go to the local council for support, that bill is going to begin totting up. And then when her mother comes to die, instead of that money and the home being retained within that family, it's gone. She must just represent so many people. And I think that's what we need to remember when we're talking about this policy. It's not only the impact it's going to have on people who are pensioners, who are living with dementia, but it's their loved ones and relatives, you know, many of whom have maybe dropped down to part-time hours or no work at all in order to support their relatives the best they could, and then, you know, face absolute destitution.
Exactly.
At the point, I mean, it's bad enough when you lose a loved one, the devastation and grief of the loss of the person, you know, let alone having to deal with this, you know, absolute bombshell from the government.
Exactly. I mean, it shows it's a really heartless policy. But she's given one thing to carers, which is that they're now allowed to take a year's leave to care for their loved ones on the condition that they can afford, they get, it's unpaid. So. On the condition, it just shows how out of touch she is. You know, she's assuming that people are going to be able to take a year's unpaid leave. It's terrifying how out of touch she is with that.
Well, I was seeing the responses to that on Twitter. This, you know, we'll give you a year of leave, but we're not going to actually fund it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, can you imagine, like, your phone company, your the energy company, your mortgage provider, they're not giving you a year off. They're not going to say, do you know what, we'll pause all your bills, you stay home. It's just fantasy land.
Exactly.
Absolute fantasy land. And what about this free school meals business as well, Bex?
I know. So on the one hand, you've got Corbyn, who's planning to extend free school meals by taxing private school fees. And on the other hand, you've got May, who's planning to replace free school meals with breakfast to make savings. It sums it all up, really. That's a really symbolic cut. And that's going to hit millions as well.
And again, I mean, she's literally taking food out of the mouths of children now. You know, what else does this party need to do to be taken out of power?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's just flagrant the way she's trashing vast swathes of the population.
Oh, I can't get over it. So.
And then on the other hand, the only winners you've got are the wealthy and the corporations. So it shows where the priorities are.
That's what I was going to ask you. Because I was reading through it and thinking, you know, let's play devil's advocate. There's got to be someone somewhere in the country who's going to actually benefit from this manifesto. But so far, all I've got are people who want to rip foxes apart with dogs. People who want to take the tusks out of elephants because she's, you know, repealing bans on the ivory trade and corporations who are going to get to, you know, their corporation tax cut to 17%. I mean, am I missing something or is that literally it?
No, that's it. People who like hunting foxes. You know, if you like hunting foxes and you own a small island, you'll do very well out of the Tory manifesto, out of the Tory government.
But, I don't even know else. Literally don't even know what else to say about it. I struggle to recall any manifesto at any point that has been as poor as this one.
Yeah.
Any offers?
No, I think this one does it. This one does it. I mean, there's other really disturbing things about it, like the dog whistle politics she's engaged in to try and win over UKIP voters. Migrant workers get really hammered here. She's looking to charge migrant workers more to access the NHS, and she's promising to double charges to companies employing them. Total dog whistle politics. Playing with fire, really, playing with fire.
Well, complete. I mean, we already know the data's out there for anyone to see. We already know that the immigrant population to Britain pays its taxes. We get we get billions of pounds a year in additional tax revenue paid by immigrants to Britain, and they're also more likely to be in work than the indigenous population, and less likely to claim benefits. So there's literally no economic basis for this policy at all. This is pure dog whistle racism.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Oh,
beggar's belief. Okay, so thank you very much for that, Bex. and Theresa May's horrifying vision for Britain. So there's kind of a night and day change coming up between what you've just heard from the Conservative manifesto and what you're about to hear from the Labour manifesto. But before we get to that, we're going to just go over to Nancy, who's going to give you a quick reminder at home of how you can get in touch with us at CanaryPod.
Hi, this is Nancy from the Canary. We hope you've been enjoying CanaryPod. If you are, please take the time to subscribe, rate, and review CanaryPod on iTunes or your chosen podcast platform. That's the only way that more people will see it in their recommended podcast list. And with something as important as a general election coming up, we'd like to reach as many new Canaries as possible. If you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at CanaryPod, or you can email us on podcast@thecanary.co. And now back to the Battle of the Manifestos with Kerry, Bex, and Ed. Bye.
So now we're going to take a look at the vision for Britain laid out by Labour in their manifesto. And leading us through that is Ed Sykes. Hello, Ed.
Hello there.
So, Ed, can you lead us through the key pledges that Labour are making that they will deliver if they're voted in on the 8th of June?
Okay. Well, essentially, while the Tories have been giving power away over the last 7 years through privatisation and just generally empowering their corporate buddies, the Labour manifesto appears to be about taking back some sort of democratic control. And this is through tax policies, through health, education, energy, transport. And it's one of the fairest and most democratic manifestos for a long time in British politics.
So what are the specific promises that they're making?
Okay, so regarding tax and work in general, you've got a few big promises like the £10 living wage, pension protections, an end to 0 hours contracts. And, Labour has ruled out the rises of VAT, national insurance and income tax for all but the richest 5% of the population. So only a rise in corporation tax and income tax for the wealthiest people. And there's a Robin Hood tax as well. But 95% or more of ordinary British people will not see a tax rise. And that's a big thing. But it's hardly revolutionary. As Labour's Barry Gardiner pointed out, the media's obsession with this sort of radical communist regime under Corbyn is absolutely ridiculous, because Labour's top tax rate is actually 10% lower than the 60% rate for 9 years under Margaret Thatcher. And Labour's 26% corporation tax is half of Thatcher's 52% rate from 79 to 82, and her lowest was 34%. So if Corbyn's a communist, Thatcher's even worse. She's on a different planet.
I mean, I think that's kind of the problem with the conversation in our media at the moment, isn't it? Because they never talk about this. They never say, you know, Margaret Thatcher is kind of, prior to this government, seen as, the sort of queen of neoliberalism, the queen of, capitalism, and this sort of vicious, tough iron lady of the right. And there were way higher taxes under the Thatcher government than Corbyn is even proposing now. This is how far to the right Britain has shifted economically. Staggering.
Absolutely ridiculous, especially from papers that hail Thatcher as some sort of goddess, like the Telegraph or the Mail or whatever. These very same papers are going absolutely off the rockers because of a moderate shift to the left. It's not even a significant shift to the left. It's quite a responsible, slow, moderate change that's proposed by Labour.
If Margaret Thatcher was to run today on her 1979 manifesto, they'd probably be calling her like Maggie the Militant. Red Thatcher.
Exactly. But I mean that's generally the case because Corbyn and his party want to democratise the media. They want to see more democratic accountability and ensuring that people in charge of big media organisations are fit to be in that position, which obviously we might think that people like Rupert Murdoch and others of the ilk would not be. But that's precisely why the media moguls know they've got it so good with Theresa May. Yeah. And that's why they are not holding the Tories to account in the same way that they're attacking Labour. Even though the Tories are completely untrustworthy because they failed consistently on economic promises, shifting back their targets, doubling the debt. It's absolutely ridiculous and they're just not being held to account.
I mean, it is laughable that Theresa May can run on, again, promising to end the deficit by the end of this parliament. The Conservatives made this promise in 2010. They failed. They made the promise in 2015. They failed. And now she's making it again. And rather than the media turning around and saying, hang on a minute, Theresa, this is the third time your party's made this promise. And all indicators suggest we're going in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
Not a dicky bird. Just crickets. She just gets to make the promise and go on. And, you know, he's portrayed as this, you know, so strong and stable on the economy. And you've got, I mean, I was talking to Steve about this on last week's podcast. As you know, data which is suggests now we no longer even have a national economy in the UK. So they actually broke down the economy into regions. And only two regions are as well off or better off than they were before the financial crisis in 2007. And obviously no one will be surprised to find out who those two regions are, London and the South East. Every other region of the UK, of the entire UK, this is seven regions, every other region is poorer and some are literally in depression. And she's allowed to run as the choice for people voting for the economy.
Mm. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But anyway, on a positive note, we've got some really, really big policy areas in the Labour manifesto. One of those is health. Obviously, we've had such an assault on the health system under the Tories with backdoor privatisation and serious underfunding that doctors and nurses alike are really up in arms about the mess that Jeremy Hunt has created. And so Labour is promising to ensure safe staffing levels, scrap the NHS pay cap, to give £30 billion in extra NHS funding in the next Parliament. And nurses won't have to go to food banks anymore under that system. And I think that's something that most voters need to be aware of.
That's absolutely, I mean, that's got to be music to the ears of people working in across the NHS, doctors, nurses and patients alike.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the same situation with education. Labour is also going to put an additional £25 billion a year into a national education service. So creating something similar to the NHS, but with education. And I think that is an incredibly bold and visionary move.
it's certainly been received that way. You know, looking at commentary on it, I mean, there are two things that leapt out about the National Education Service. For me, obviously, you've got the scrapping of tuition fees, the return of maintenance grants and support for people in learning, but not just young people, you know, primary, secondary and higher ed, further and higher education, but actually for lifelong learning, which is, you know, just such a breath of fresh air, because I feel like sometimes the Conservatives, they're not even doing this well, to be honest, but they just view education as kind of a pipeline to supply employees to corporations in a few years. And the thing is, that's not what education is about. Education, you call me old-fashioned, but shouldn't education be about creating the citizens of the future? You know, they will be employees. That has to be one major consideration. They may also be business owners and start up their own small businesses, but they're also going to be potentially parents, carers, friends. They need to be able to think critically, participate in democracy. There's loads of, you know, roles that we play in our lives that we rely on education, you know, to support us being the best at. And it just, and I, what I can see in these, you know, this National Education Service policy is from cradle to grave, you know, just as we take public health as an issue which counts from cradle to grave, it's mapping that to education as well. It's it's really exciting stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And we've got a really impressive shadow education secretary as well in Angela Rayner. And last night she put it so clearly that it's about investing in the post-Brexit future. Like, what kind of future do we want when we're outside the EU? And education is the best way to ensure that British people can meet the challenges in a world of massive technological advances and climate dangers and all of this. And Angela Rayner said on Question Time last night, when you've got choices to make, putting money into the 95% rather than the 5% is the right option. And that's not something you would get with the Tories.
Yeah.
Because the Tories, obviously, as Bex was saying, they're focused on selective education. Even though they're trying to avoid the word grammar, they are interested in that kind of education, which is essentially for the top 5%. And Labour, on the other hand, is choosing to invest in the vast majority of the British population rather than the wealthy minority. And that's impressive.
Well, music to everyone's ears, I think, having spent 7 years under this, you know, ideological austerity, which seems to understand the price of everything and the value of nothing. Okay, so where else in this manifesto do we go with you now, Ed?
Okay, so essentially, the Labour manifesto is about taking back democratic control. And one of the big areas here is with nationalisation, bringing back certain key public services into public hands and democratic control. So we've seen the stealth privatisation of the health service and the education sector, but Labour is also looking to transport, energy and water. So one of the big flagship policies is renationalising the railways, so that essentially, instead of subsidising foreign states, which are in charge for the most part of many of our rail networks, the money would be invested back into the service. So rather than seeing constant rises in rail fares, taking the railways back into public ownership would, it's just a no-brainer, because we would get the money back and travellers would benefit.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a point that seems lost on some people. I think partly because, again, the media does such a poor job of explaining who runs our railways right now. So I think most people think it's just private businesses running the railways. It's entirely private, and somehow nationalising it means we'd all be paying more. And I think that's a complete misnomer. I mean, what we have is a situation now where the taxpayer is already subsidising the private rail industry to the tune of multiple billions of pounds each year. And in fact, last year, that was literally used for a shareholder payout of those companies. So this is like direct, this is a direct, you know, your tax money being put directly into the hands of private companies in order to generate a profit for shareholders. At the same time, ticket price inflation is through the roof on all, pretty much all rail networks. And I can remember I was commuting into London a few years back for a period of time when I was living in Surrey. And, you know, the season ticket for the year was over £3,000. You know, £3,000. There was never a seat. You're just paying to kind of be a sardine, you know, trapped in a tin can. And what this is about is actually saying, look, if we're going to pay multiple billions of pounds a year anyway, let's own it, not rent it. You know, let's have that cash going into the service, not going into shareholder payouts, which I think comes to a wider point, Ed, to be honest, in this whole scenario, because obviously you will have known, having covered the Labour manifesto this week, that the kind of the Conservative response was, oh, look, it's Labour shaking the magic money tree again. You know, where's the money going to come from for these policies? I mean, firstly, these policies have all been fully costed anyway, and we know where that money is coming from. And it's really about a shift in priorities. It's not generating any new money from anywhere. It's just allocating the money that we do have differently. Because I think most people aren't even aware the numbers have been crunched. And British taxpayers are currently subsidising private corporations to the tune of £93 billion a year. Every year. £93 billion. And all Labour are doing is saying, we're going to take about half of that and put it back into public services and the welfare state in order to generate an economic recovery that we've been waiting for nigh on a decade. Economically entirely literate.
Yeah, it's essentially a choice between subsidising the rich, the private corporations, or subsidising ordinary taxpayers. So it goes round in a circle. So it's a simple choice.
It really is that cut and dry. I mean, that is how simple the choice is. And it's just such a shame that the conversation is so kind of switched around and muddled with in the media. So you feel like it's a choice between, you know, the Conservatives on the one hand growing the economy and Labour on the other hand, like restricting economic growth in order to make things a bit fairer. But that is not the choice. I mean, the choice is continue with the slowest economic recovery in recorded history, a recovery which has only impacted two regions of the United Kingdom at the cost of public services, national infrastructure, pensions and the welfare state that go with it, or rapid reinvestment in our economy, which would trigger an economic growth that we haven't witnessed in Britain for over a decade, and make things fairer. I mean, am I missing something?
Exactly. It's a no-brainer, isn't it? It's a no-brainer. I mean, there's such big projects going on in the Corbyn manifesto. There's the house building scheme. There's, you know, it would be a massive stimulus to the economy, but it's just not getting reported that way.
Absolutely. That's a really good point you've just made, Bex. Ed, what is happening in housing as well? Because that's a really exciting area of policy, especially given that we're in a serious housing crisis at the moment. I mean, it's one of the biggest issues facing the British voters.
Well, it's a similar case because with things like health and education and railways and energy and water, they're all essential services. And so is housing. Housing is a fundamental part of human dignity, having a roof over your head. And because our system is so messed up at the moment, we have such an absence of affordable housing. People are hemorrhaging money into the pockets of private landlords. And as Caroline Lucas said last night in a debate, over £8 billion per year in housing benefit from the government goes directly into the pockets of private landlords. That is absolutely criminal. So rather than doing that, rather than just filling the pockets of private interests, Labour plans to create, to build a million new homes. And that is something that is sorely needed in this country.
It really is. I mean, it has echoes, doesn't it, of the sort of the radical programme put forward by Labour Prime Minister Clement Attlee, you know, when he was elected to power after World War II. You know, most of us who were fortunate enough to benefit from council housing as kids will probably have lived in a house built by the Attlee government or shortly thereafter. And they were building at their height around a million homes a year. And at that time, so taxpayer spending on housing at that time, in the time of the Attlee government, about 80% of it was going on supply side. So that's building the homes, maintaining the homes, and just 20% went on other things. That number has now actually flipped. So you now have 80% of government spending on housing going on the demand side. That's literally paying rent to private landlords that are seeking to profit from the housing supply shortage. It's a staggering figure. So we've gone from using our tax money to build homes and make homes to using our tax money to rent homes from private landlords at a much higher price. And in fact, it's even worse than that. So if you look at some astonishing figures that I was looking at the other day around to kind of put house price and rent inflation in perspective. So if the price of eggs had risen as quickly as rents have since 1970, a packet of six eggs would cost you £19.
Yeah.
That would not be described as a good thing, you know, but every time you turn on the news, it's presented like house prices going up and rents going up is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's also, it's worth mentioning Labour's, you know, private, the stuff they promised on private rented sector as well, because that's quite, well, it's so needed. They're proposing introducing an inflation cap on rent rises, making three-year tenancies the norm, new legal minimum standards to make sure they're fit for habitation, the rights to take action if it's substandard. They're coming at it from both sides, both on the house building and on the private, on the rented sector. Yeah.
That's incredible. So it's not only creating better conditions for the people who could live in those future council houses, but actually dealing with the issues of people who won't, securing tenancies, reducing rents.
Yeah.
It's really exciting stuff.
Yeah, that's essentially the plaster. While the social housing stock is built up again, Labour is sort of taking measures to make sure people are okay in the meantime, because there is a massive, massive crisis at the moment. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people are really struggling to find affordable housing.
So what else do we have to look forward to, Mr. Sykes?
Regarding national defence or security, Theresa May's government has actually seen police numbers being cut by 20,000. These cuts have put Britain's security at risk. And they've shrunk the size of the army to apparently the smallest size since the Napoleonic Wars. Labour would look to remedy that with hiring 10,000 new police officers. Also, are hiring 3,000 new firefighters, which have also who have also been suffering under the Tories. And Corbyn has shown himself consistently to be a very principled supporter of conflict resolution and human rights, which Labour promises to put at the heart of foreign policy, ending support for unilateral aggressive wars of intervention and backing effective action to alleviate the refugee crisis, while reviewing all training and equipment contracts with repressive regimes, so many of Britain's current allies, in order to ensure that Britain doesn't collude in the mistreatment of civilians.
That's incredible. Didn't Angela Rayner touch on this on Question Time?
Yeah, Angela Rayner's put it perfectly, calling the Tories out on their foreign policy hypocrisy, of sort of putting business before human rights. She said, "We're spending money on giving aid to Yemen, yet we're selling arms to Saudi Arabia, who are causing the crisis in Yemen." And that is just, it really is mind-boggling, the hypocrisy at the centre of the Tories' foreign policy, because they do talk all of these platitudes about respect for democracy and all of these things, but they're helping to prop up incredibly repressive regimes, whether in Saudi Arabia or Turkey or wherever else. That it's crazy.
I mean, I can remember, you know, when she did her recent visit to Saudi Arabia, and the Conservatives tweeted out, oh, you know, go Theresa May refusing to wear hijab on her visit to Saudi Arabia. It's like, but she's gone there to kiss the ring of the Saudi king and sell a bunch of weapons that are going to kill a load of kids in Yemen. I don't care what she's wearing on her head. Frankly.
Yeah. Priorities.
Oh, quite indeed. So we've got ethical foreign policy, a massive change to the tax system that's geared around reducing the burden on low and middle earners. We've got the National Education Service, lifelong learning, scrapping tuition fees, free school meals, universal rather than, you know, means tested. We've got guaranteed for elderly people. We've got the guaranteed triple lock on pensions. We've got universal winter fuel allowance intact. You know, the universality of social care. So we move away from means testing and form filling for people in their sunset years. They can just, it's there. The state is going to, you know, guarantee you that protection in old age. The nationalisation of, you know, the key industries, rail, water, energy. Is there anything else that we're missing, Ed, in terms of this manifesto?
I think essentially the thing right at the centre is taking back some sort of democratic control from corporations, from the economic and political establishment in the country. It's taking back control and investing in a strong post-Brexit future. I mean, Labour has accepted Brexit. It says it respects the decision. But now it's focusing on what kind of country we want after Brexit. Yeah. We want to invest in ordinary working British people, not invest and subsidise in the very richest in society. Labour is looking to take back democratic control for ordinary working people, rather than, and that's in opposition to the Tory vision, which is an apparent return to Victorian Britain, essentially.
Yeah. Quite. Okay, so, I mean, it looks like night and day to me, the difference between these manifestos. I can't even tell a lie. I was reading the Labour manifesto, actually got a little bit moist in the eyes. I was kind of, you know, it was actually genuinely moving to think that this is a possibility now. You know, there is actually a possibility. I know, you know, a lot of interviews that we've done, you know, in the run-up to this election, people are asking us, you know, will Corbyn win? Can he win? You know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we're not psychics. You know, we can't, you know, we're not fortune tellers. We can't predict what's going to happen in the election. And as we've seen, you know, with Brexit in Britain, with the Donald Trump situation, horror show in America, pollsters have been well off in terms of predicting the outcome. So I don't think even they are doing a particularly good job right now of being able to gauge what's happening, you know, home by home, town by town, across the electorate. But you just look at these two manifestos and you think, like, which country do you want to live in? Do you want to live in this country, you know, tearing apart foxes, shafting old people, making the least able pay the highest amount of tax, to asset stripping the, you know, our public services? Or do you want to live in this other one, you know, where we're investing in our future, investing in our kids, protecting our elderly and vulnerable citizens? And like, I know which one I want to live in. It's the good one. I mean, how are you both feeling about it?
It feels like it's a, you know, it's been a long time since we've had a real choice at the ballot box, isn't it? It feels like a once in a generation opportunity, really. It's crunch time.
Yeah. What about you, Ed?
It's essentially a choice between fairness in democracy or injustice in hypocrisy. And that's what people have got to choose. It definitely is an uphill battle because the Tories have got the corporate media on their side. But it's clear that many of Labour's proposed policies are actually very, very popular. It's just the media smears against Corbyn and his team that we need to fight against. And that's one of the big roles for us in the independent new media sector. To really hold the powerful to account.
Yeah, because Theresa May's relying on that, really, isn't she? She's brought out this manifesto that attacks the old, the young, the working classes, the middle classes, and she's basically just relying on the media to smear Corbyn and knock him out of the race and win it for her. But that's not quite happening yet. Let's see how it works out.
You both make a really good point, actually, about the role of the media in this, and obviously we're part of that. We're part of this kind of new media revolution, new independent media outlets, you know, trying to make a change, you know, give people a wider view of politics and economics and what's possible for ourselves and our country and our world. And we're starting to break through here, aren't we, really? I mean, we were looking at the Alexa. So there's a web ranking system called Alexa, so you can, you know, assess which websites are most viewed in any country. And currently, of all the websites in the UK, so this isn't just news websites, this is everything, the Canary is ranking at 427, which is insane. But Bex, who was at 404, just a few places ahead of us?
Only the Times.
The Times! We're coming after you, Rupert Murdoch. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, we're 19 months old. We started with £500 of investment, which we paid ourselves. We're wholly owned by ourselves. You know, you two own bits of, you know, the Canary too. And we're snapping at Rupert Murdoch's heels.
Well, it just shows the hunger that's out there for non-corporate media. I mean, you know, and there's loads of others that are doing really well. Evolve is growing fast. You know, there's dozens of brilliant independent media outlets. But it just shows how badly the corporate media has failed us and how much of a hunger there is to fix that.
Absolutely. I mean, it is really exciting to be a part of what we're a part of. You know, to see guys, as you say, like Evolve, you know, Navarra, Byline, Squawk Box, another Angry Voice. I mean, I could go on all day listing them. They're fantastic outlets. Also, another one I've got to give a shout out to is Media Diversified. If you're not reading them, do. They produce fantastic work. And I'm just really proud that we're just a part of that team of people that are just trying to tell the truth and a wider array of stories than you're likely to read anywhere else.
Yeah, and it's all part of the same situation as well, all the same environment. People are annoyed and angry with the media establishment, the political establishment, the economic establishment, and the standing up.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing. People are standing up against this interlinked establishment between the corporate media, the economic establishment, the neoliberal order, and general political hypocrisy.
Well, that sounds like a fine way to end bring our show to a close this week. the voters have got the choice on the 8th of June. You can go with Theresa May's misery manifesto. You can go with Labour's manifesto, which promises investment and taking back control. Whoever you vote for, please vote. Don't let your voice be lost. Don't disenfranchise yourself, because believe me, the people with the power in this country are working very hard to disenfranchise you already. So at least put up a fight. Really thank you for listening to the Canary Pod this week. Thanks to Bex and Ed for a fantastic show. And to all of you at home, remember, don't get angry, get involved.